What's up, boys? Thanks for your patience. All right. So, quick thing here. I put it in a post already because obviously I didn't reschedule the live stream from yesterday like I was supposed to. So what I'm going to do right now is I got the usernames of everybody that was in chat waiting for me, complaining that I wasn't there, rightfully so. And I'm going to have a raffle. I know it sounds goofy, but you know what? I don't have much to offer. So I have two extra copies of my book that I haven't gifted yet. So I'm going to take one, a signed copy. I'll reach out to the person. I guess I'll try on here. Maybe I'll do a post on it. Anyways, I'll try and do it privately. If I can't, I'll do it publicly. If you're comfortable with that, if you want a signed copy, then just, we'll share some details. I'll ship it out to you. Otherwise, we'll pass to the next person on the list. And if nobody wants it, well, then we'll just mea culpa that one. But how's it going, everybody? Welcome. We're on chapter, what is it, 7? Yeah, 7. Prompting people you care about to be more assertive and less manipulative towards you. That gentle reminder. I don't care about the telling people how you want to be treated thing. Morning, everybody. It's more so about negative inquiry, or what you would think of if you were in the PUA circles as a pressure flip. So, like I said, awesome. I would say don't forget to hit like and subscribe, but so far I've got more likes than concurrent viewers right now. So you guys are doing a bang up job, better than I would. Anyways, getting back to it, I just realized this thing is horribly oversized. Let's fix this. Proper sizing. There we go. Much better. Get in there. Where did we leave off? Look at that. So many things in the background. Like in the filter, digging the intro music. Yeah. Honestly, nothing terrifies me more than being a 1984 talking head talking about crap like that. The least I can do is make this a pleasurable experience for everybody. It's not just yapping at people. It's about the aesthetic. He goes over some brief things about negative assertions. He goes into things about fogging. The one thing we kind of touched on, and I know there's a ton of overlap between it, is negative inquiry. So starting off, to understand the concept of negative inquiry, look at the differences between two similar statements in response to criticism. Let's, for example, assume that your wife or husband, as the case may be, I don't judge, whatever. Welcome, Alphabet Mafia. Love seeing you here. Going fishing. So one, I don't understand. What is it about my fishing that's going bad or that's bad? Or two, what do you think going fish? What makes you think going fishing is bad? So the first statement is an assertive, non-defensive, negative inquiry response that is non-critical of the spouse and prompts her to make further critical statements to examine her own structure of right and wrong that she's using to cope with this situation. So you notice that you make it about you. One of the things here, so we always talk about, like, you got to have irrational self-confidence, make everything about you, and everybody thinks that just means to be a selfish prick. But yeah, even when dealing with criticism with these assertive tools, again, make it all about you. Solipsism, the female strategy adopted to male sensibilities. It's not about fishing in this case. Yeah, I don't like it when you go fishing. So what is it about me going fishing that's bad? You make it all about you, so that way the other person doesn't feel attacked. And when they don't feel attacked, they're more than happy to be honest. You're going to come into two situations on this. Now, he doesn't talk about it in here, but we're going to use internet slap fights because I think everybody had an example of being called anything under the sun, from a hard R to an F-bomb, whatever, on the internet. So what is it about me going fishing that's such a problem? And if you get this kind of spurgy internet ad hominem kind of attack, it's going to be something the effect of, like, you're a beta male, you're a cock, whatever you want to throw out there. And then you already know, okay, so as far as conversation goes, this is a closed conversation, and what are you getting back? Insolence. If you look at it from a status position, is the kind of person who's trying to chop me down going to think that they're better than me or worse than me? It's usually worse. People that are better don't feel the need to cut out the people below them unless there's a gripping insecurity about it, in which case they feel lower status. And it's very obvious to see where this is in the harmony spectrum. Do they think they're on the same team as me, or are they against me? So insolence is not only an expression of lower status, it's an expression of anti-harmony. And if you're getting this from the internet, and I could give a personal example if you want on this, or from your wife at home, just realize that it's like a petulant teenager. I hate you, Dad. I just want out of this damn house. And that can let you know so much more about the conversation than the actual words, and I guarantee you in this case it has nothing to do with phishing. The reason negative inquiry is good is, if you remembered, we talked before about the exchange of free information and disclosures. This is a way to take just a simple inquiry as to why somebody is assaulting you with this certain criticism and peeling back so much information from it that you're able to make a better estimation as to what you're doing in this interaction. Now, I'd argue if it's something you're not invested in, if it's somebody, you know, online, if it's a coworker, if it's just somebody that you have no vested interest in them, if they don't provide value, well, then that lets you know there's nothing to be gained from this. It's a dude who's trying to bite you off at the ankles, and you can just be like, yeah, whatever, get bent. I'll talk to you later. It's nice talking to you again. I'm going fishing. And so he goes on in here. So if the response to your statement of what is it about my fishing or about me going fishing that's bad, your wife, partner, person you're talking to is generally going to come up with logical or good reasons why fishing is bad, such as it gives you a headache, it makes you smell, it'll tire you out. You can still do negative inquiry to continue on this. It's like, I don't understand. Can you walk me? Like, I'm not the smartest guy on the earth. Let me know what you're talking about. And this gets into something I'm pretty sure anybody who's ever done like a Six Sigma, black belt, green belt, whatever, you'll probably know what I'm talking about here, but it's the five whys. And it's the idea that if you want to get to the core of any problem and not that surface level conflict, usually you'll get there by the fifth time you ask a person why. And so if you're in an engagement that you don't want to just walk away from, in this case, wives, girlfriends, long-term relationships, bosses, long-term engagements like this with whatever person, you're more likely to want to use negative inquiry in this case. I think you're an absolute dick. Well, what do you mean I'm a dick? Like, what did I do that was so bad? Well, it's like you stayed up too late. You did this, you did that. Yeah, but we've never had a problem with that before. What's the issue? You see what I mean? Negative inquiry. I've never had an issue with that before. Why is it a thing? And then eventually, if you use negative inquiry enough, you get to the core of the issue. And if anybody here has been in a relationship for any length of time, he will tell you, anytime you have an argument about a nail, it's not about the nail. It's always an underlying thing. You never clean up around this house. That could mean anything from I'm frustrated at work and taking my day out on you, to I haven't slept last night, to I'm hungry, to I've cheated on you and I feel guilty about it, so I need something to be your fault so I can feel better. The entire spectrum of things. And you're not going to know which it is unless you start using negative inquiry from a general inquisitive stance. Like I said, this is for people that you're already invested in. If it's a random thought you just met, if it's a third date, if it's 6 months into a short-term relationship, they don't get that much honesty from you. They don't get that much investment. They have to earn that. And they earn that by being on best behavior. So don't start doing this on a Tinder date you just met and start doing negative inquiry, because you're going to look like a weirdo. It's no different than basically simping for girls online, that thirst trap stuff. You don't want a thirst trap in real life. I'm telling you guys. If you do it, don't blame me and don't come telling me you tried it and it didn't work. I met a girl last night off a Hinge and I tried negative inquiry and she told me I was a weirdo and that I should pay for these drinks and get out of here. What did I do wrong? I'm like, well, you did it a little early in the relationship. Let's just put it that way. Yeah, Marty remembers what I'm talking about. It's not about the nail in my head. There's a great YouTube video. Come check it out. But to summarize, so he says here, the end result of the first negative inquiry interaction will, in the best case, be an examination by your wife or of her own arbitrary right and wrong structure. Headaches are wrong, being tired is wrong, being smelly is wrong. The structure she is trying to impose to manipulate you in lieu of asserting her own wishes to do something else besides fishing or staying around the house in the evening. It's a long-winded way of saying she can't just come out and say, I don't like it when you fish because I want to spend time with you on the couch watching Netflix, because that puts the responsibility on her. And if you've been watching this channel for any length of time, you should know the last thing the girls want is responsibility, because responsibility comes with the chance of failure, and the chance of failure comes with the odds of blame. And the odds of blame taps into that caveman Stacy DNA to say, as soon as something is my fault, the tribe's leaving me, and that's not good. You don't want that. Well, I mean, they don't want that. There we go. The OCD in me kicks in. But that's the thing. So she develops, and this is something called the hamster. She develops this convoluted set of right and wrong, rules of the universe, everything that's going on. Why? Not because she actually thinks this thing is right or she thinks this thing is wrong. She feels a certain way and she needs the world to make sense based on her feeling structure. And that is why a girl's rules, and that's why you never listen to them, you have your own frame, because they are changing like the wind. If she feels one day one minute, she feels another day the next minute, or if she feels another way the next minute, you're going to get an entirely set, a different set of unchanging rules. This is where that huge frustration from married guys. How can she slap? I don't get it. This isn't a problem yesterday. Today it's a problem. Yeah, it's completely arbitrary because it has nothing to do with the things you're talking about. It's all to do with them imposing their own worldview on you, which is so flippant. It's as flippant as their feelings. The dishwasher leaked on the floor could be as much a problem to you as you cheated on her with the secretary. I talked about this actually in No More Mr. Nice Guy as well, when I made references to The Last Psychiatrist, where he talks about failed parenting strategies. And there are a lot of the reason why single parent households, which to that you should mean single mom households, tend to raise such horrible kids. It's because parenting is hard. You have to be consistent. You have to have structure. You got to keep your emotions out of it because your kid is useless and he doesn't know any better. But what a girl will do, because it's very easy to do, is instead of consistently showing ramifications for behavior, actions, and consequences, she'll attack the kid as a form of identity. You're a bad boy. Good boys do this. Don't be a piece of crap like your father. And a kid who's absolutely helpless in life will look at this going, I need this person to love me because otherwise they're going to let me starve and I can't hunt my own meat. So these mental models, they start when people are young. And then as you get older, with extra influence in your life from so many more women in your formative years than what used to be, is that they kind of put this into you as like a standard way of being, your modus operandi. And that's why guys are doing this at 20, 30, 40, 50, sometimes 60 years old. We could say it's not their fault, but I don't know. I'm a guy. I don't like that thing. Yeah, they set you up for failure. Yeah, you performed exactly as you were supposed to, but you want to win or do you want to feel good? So you just have to accept the discomfort that's going to come with rewiring this stuff. And one of the easiest strategies, again, negative inquiry, because it at very least lets you pull back the curtain and see things for the way they really are and not what you're hearing. Turns out you don't actually have to do dishes to make her more comfortable. Turns out she's just stressed at work. Nothing to do with you, not your fault, so you don't have to address it. And the beauty of that is validation seeking. Like, by addressing all these complaints and criticisms as real, it's a weird, warped version of validation seeking behavior, where instead of a girl saying, well, I like astrology, and you saying, well, I like astrology too. In that way, it's like a simping way of saying, yeah, if I do this, then she'll give me the love that I want. If I address your criticisms as valid, it's the same thing, only from a negative connotation. But by these negative inquiries, you're going to better able to learn what it is that makes it a good criticism or a bad criticism. And if it's a bad criticism, you can use fogging, for example. So you don't address the criticism. You address her feelings. I can see your feelings are real, or however you want to word that, doesn't sound autistic. But you don't validate them. And by this, you're actually pulling other people into your frame. Just by setting the rules of engagement is a good way to think about it. Carrying on. Negative inquiry assertions do not come about, and the interaction results in only in a stalemate with the extinction of critical statements. You can attempt to break the stalemate by negative inquiry prompting of your spouse to assert herself. For example, you might inquire, I really don't understand. There must be something else about this other than me going fishing, tired, smelling up the house, and headaches. That makes no sense. So what else is wrong you don't want to talk about? No, there's a blunt way. The way I tend to do it is just, look, we know this has nothing to do with the dishes. Just tell me what's on your mind. And then it puts it on me. So she can tell me what's on my mind, what's on her mind. And it's no longer a responsibility thing. Hey, you asked. It's not my fault that I told you I didn't like it when you slept with the neighbor. You know what I mean? And that's one of those things. That's, again, leadership, leading through the emotions. Girls aren't able to articulate this stuff. There's something in their DNA that just makes it painful to them. It's like asking you to kick yourself in the nuts. It's just not going to happen. But this is a way of you, as a man, leading the interaction. Now, again, got to preface this because spot of the tism runs rampant. If a girl hasn't earned this from you, don't give it to her. People always wonder, what does a man offer in a relationship? Well, this is what you offer. You're essentially becoming a girl's pastor, a girl's shrink, a girl's father, and a girl's lover. That's a lot of work. And if you're not getting a girl's best from you, why waste your time with it? In this case, this is why shut the F up is like a key strategy, because guys will start treating this like it's a parlor trick. Well, if I do A, B, and C and work out the mathematics and build the five whys and do some negative inquiry, then she's going to love me forever. Tell me that doesn't sound like a covert contract. I dare you. So again, it's all about value. If she doesn't offer value, you don't do any of this stuff, because it's not in your wheelhouse to care about somebody and reward good behavior by doing it. But once you're in a good place where you start to get better behavior, this is where you can start treating these things, as opposed to just nuking comfort tests, nuking fitness tests, or just nuking criticism in general. Yeah, okay. Like, okay is he didn't mention it here because he's assuming people care about each other, but if you got a really bitchy wife who's going to be a soon-to-be ex-wife, K is the only answer she deserves. Anyways, moving on from that. So in training, people grasp the non-defensive concept behind negative inquiry. I've used the following general training dialogues as a first exercise. In an exercise, non-situational criticism is directed to the learner by myself or another learner. And the learner is coached on appropriate negative inquiry responses to this criticism. As in the fogging exercise, the critic first makes derogatory comments about the learner's dressing habits, a subject which most of us can tolerate with a minimum of distress. After the learner is able to cope with that criticism, though, through negative inquiry, without denial, defensiveness, or aggressive counter-criticism, the critic gradually moves his criticism to the more personal area of physical appearance and then to the personality traits and moral character of the learner. I don't know if anybody's caught on to this yet, and I think it's absolutely brilliant in its simplicity. What I just described is somebody coming into the married red pill or this space for the first time. It's a common critique. Most guys will come in and it's like, dude, I came in, I did my victim puke like you guys ask, and you just called me a giant bundle of sticks. I didn't come here to be like yelled at like I was Xbox in 2007, but that's exactly what this was. If you can't hold frame to a bunch of random morons on the internet, how do we expect that you've done any of this stuff with your actual wife or that you're even capable? So the purpose of that, the purpose of berating a guy when he first get in there, is you're testing. In the same way you ask, do you even lift, bro, post your lifts? We're asking, have you read enough of When I Say No, I Feel Guilty to understand this purpose of criticism to invoke negative inquiry? And it's super creative and it's super clever when you see a guy gets it. He takes this, he realizes it's an act. I'm going to do? There's a great article. Hipsters on Food Stamps, part 3. It's probably the best thing this guy's ever written, and it's the stuff that kind of gave him notoriety. Oops, no thanks. Not Thought Catalog. What the hell is that crap? So Hipsters on Food Stamps, part 3. I'm putting the link in the description in the live chat. Feel free to check it out. The part that I'm focusing on here is he makes a reference to the movie Glengarry Glen Ross. If you guys never watched it, it's the only clip that they ever throw up. It's that always be closing scene with Alec Baldwin. He mentions a really good point here, and it's something that you can take away from this to understand. Now, I know it's a fiction, it's a written thing, but the language is important so you understand the difference. He asks at one point, are they all here? No, there's one missing. He's like, all right, I'm going to go anyways. And it lets you know that it's this beratement, this is exactly what goes on in the male social matrix when we talk about initial fitness testing and wholehearted acceptance. He berates all of them. You're all fired. Now, if I got your attention, he gives a speech. He basically berates the guys constantly. And then to a smart, switched-on guy who understands this criticism, you understand it as a spectacle, as a work. It's theater. Same as like guys who went in basic training. You were yelled at for 10 weeks. And yeah, you understood that too. Okay, I get it. It's part of the game. The point here is to pump me up. And a lot of guys do that. They take that beratement with it like, oh, this is... Like they feed off of the energy. They feed off the intensity. They feed off the cadence of the conversation. And they understand not to take it personally. This is a way of checking. Are you able to keep your cool in even the slightest bit of criticism, or do you buckle like a child? So give this one a read when you get a chance. I would say the whole part is a good read, but the part that's applicable to this is part 3. Yeah, coffee is for closers. And that's why somebody's dropping an F-bomb on you in chat, why they're calling you a giant bundle of sticks or a British cigarette. Because the kind of guy, and he talks about, yeah, I've been in Married Red Pill and I'm aware for 2 years right now. If the first thing that happens when you throw a criticism at him, basically calling him a, you know, homogenous sexual. I'm trying to do some language thing here. I want, because I don't want to be offensive. The idea is I want to illustrate a point. And the guy's first response is counter-criticism. Who are you to talk to me that way? Or that seething beta male resentment? You know, I'll just quote it the way it was put in here. How cathartic. What's that line? Geez, I hate having this dead air on the thing here. I'll just scroll up to it. I know where it is in the thing here. But so it's an act. It's an act. It doesn't affect their identity. My use of gay as an example is unfortunate because half of you will see gay as bad, but the projected impulse doesn't have to be bad, merely incongruous to the desired identity that you're trying to solidify. If you doubt this, consider the sullen engineering student at the party. I'm not like these superficial sorority girls with their perfect smiles and condomless sex, who then perceives great happiness in these people. You could be happy too, dude, if you weren't so invested in not being happy. If you went to a partial understanding of why 19 to 21 Saudi Egyptian terrorists could live in America and enjoy strip clubs but still want to crumble our architecture, there you go. And that's just it. You start to, instead of looking at an identity you're shooting for, this is why criticism hurts, by the way, because that's somebody not buying into your internal narratives, your narcissistic fuel. They're not buying into it. And that's why criticism tends to work, because you have an insecurity. Now, this is the thing about unhealthy narcissism, is that you don't actually have an identity that's built from the work you've done. You know the saying, you are what you do? You actually invent one. Most common one right now is like alpha males. You can't talk to me that way. I'm an alpha male. How dare you call me this? You must be a complete, you know, wuss. Do you even lift, bro? And that lets you right now know that this guy is invested in a bad identity. And this criticism hits it right where it hurts, which is basically anywhere that doesn't admit that he's a great husband, even though he's getting absolutely horrible, horrible results from it. I'm going. So there's a part in here where he describes the speech. I'll skip on that one though, because we're getting off topic. But in the book, Manuel Smith goes through the dialogues, prompting criticism. You can read through that if you want to. Like I said, these are examples from the 70s, so it's about as useful as me telling you how to properly smoke a cigarette. Nobody cares. But the key point is, it's the idea of prompting criticism about yourself from others can also help communications in equal relationships as well as authoritarian ones. So it's not even so much that this is just about sleeping with girls or just about getting your wife out of a dead bedroom. This matters, like at the stop with the cops. He starts attacking your identity because maybe the cop had a bad day at work and you look like some guy who slept with his wife that he has to put up with and now he went back to her, whatever. Yeah, what seems to be the problem, officer? Like right there, what did I do wrong? Like that's an example of negative inquiry. Well, you were speeding. Do you know how fast you were going? No, I don't. How fast was I going? And that's just the point. You're not offering him free information that he could use to arrest you. You're using negative inquiry as an example to get him to explain what his moral framework is. What's the right and what's the wrong? Well, I saw you, you know, your taillight is out, and God knows that could be an excuse for him to want to beat the tar out of you to get the thing out of his bad day. Or maybe it's just a proper traffic stop and he's doing things properly. But by using negative inquiry in that situation, you can ascertain whether this is going to be a just pullover or an unjust pullover. And it lets you know how to react. If it's a just pullover, you make small talk, you think, keep things light. You don't have to act like you're worried about getting George Floyd in this situation. But you find out it's complete BS. Then you already know from what we talked about before, sometimes in power, you have to have tactical assertiveness. In this case, you want to be supplicative. Obviously, this guy's unhinged. He's pulling you over and he's just looking for a reason. Don't give him a reason to escalate and he won't escalate. Then fight like hell in court to get this guy thrown out. Make your stink, because while it may not look as good as being on a YouTube video of you getting the tar beat out of you like Rodney King and then getting validated by suing the courts, I would much rather just go to court and fight this one there without having my eye socket knocked out first. Now, it's up to you how alpha you want to be in this scenario, but I would much rather win than prove my identity true. So you can be an alpha male with an eye patch. That's well and good. Sometimes it's good to, like, take a tactical surrender. And that's, again, this stuff is more. You come here just to learn to sleep with chicks. You leave with self-actualization. So the practiced use of such verbal skills as fogging, negative assertion, and negative inquiry can be helpful in opening up communication by giving you, the learner, an alternate way of prompting your mate to express him or herself. So he ends on this one with, let us turn to what the first half of the book has been leading up to. Assertively coping with the common problems that other people are apt to give us in such generous amounts as we live our everyday lives. The rest of this book, and you're going to love it. So this deals in, like, how do you map the map to the terrain? I'm sure you guys have heard the saying, the map is not the terrain. We can talk about theory till we're blue in the face. But the problem is, when you're ego invested in a thirst trap, you're not going to be able to use any of these skills. You're going to look autistic if you try. If you're actually in a situation where you're worried the cop might decide to go, you know, Rodney King you, well, you're not going to have the mental state to do this. And this is why practice and repeating this stuff and replication is so important. And that's really the key to red pill in general. Like, if you're just wholeheartedly listening to me because I'm the authority, because I'm wearing the goofy shirt with the flower patterns on it, talking about this stuff and Rolo vouches for me being a good dude, you're just sheep in search of another shepherd. This is no different than the guys who listen to a guy in a lab coat because he must be correct. No different than listening to a guy at Enron telling you how to invest because, well, he's got a CPA, he must be trustworthy. Do not trust authority on the face of it. These assertive skills are a way of you sussing this stuff out. And if you can't apply this yourself, then I'm just wasting my time here. I'm no different than that guy I was criticizing before, Dr. K's techniques of getting guys to breathe and meditate. Meanwhile, they're still taking themselves out at the end of the day. It's a really tragic situation, and I hate to bring it up, but God knows the Spurgs have come at me in droves, so I figure it's an apt analogy here. At the end of the note, so that's it for this one. Like I said, a nice short chapter, a single concept. Apply this stuff in your real life. Slowly acclimatize yourself to the technique and the strategies of negative inquiry, fogging, and negative assertions. If you don't know how, manufacture situations with your girlfriend. But I guarantee, even if you're single, you're probably going to have enough supplication in your life, if this stuff is resonating, that you're going to have plenty of examples to practice it. Practice it with strangers. Pick it on the most inconsequential thing ever. Pick situations that you have anxiety and you know there's no consequences to it, because if you can do it there, you can start doing it in more serious things. And then when the time comes to do it for real, in a real situation with real consequences, well, it's going to be a natural part of being. Like, you don't have to think your way through it. That cop pulls you over when he's got his hand on his pistol, you know how to do a negative inquiry. You're not sitting there panicking, acting all sketch, which he's probably going to interpret as, this guy's probably hiding weed, let's search his car. And then you're going to say, no, you don't. I know my rights. And then next thing you know, you're going to be on a world star hip hop video. You don't want that. Actually, I guess I'll tell. So there's one other story with this, and there's the reason it's going to tie it into Dark Triad. A lot of guys think of Dark Triad as being the absolute evil villain in people's lives, which makes you more attractive. And that's not the case. Dark Triad is a set of attractive qualities in men, a mixture of psychopathy, Machiavellianism, and narcissism. So I talked briefly about unhealthy narcissism. This is where the healthy narcissism comes in. An unhealthy narcissist builds an identity and then uses language to manipulate people into buying into that narrative. It's called narcissistic fuel. And the problem is your ego invested it. So somebody, if they attacks it, and that's where criticism comes in handy. When criticism attacks that identity's core structure, the person reacts out in a narcissistic rage. And that's where you see guys, we call it spurging out essentially. But any guy who's emoting like a child about the smallest bit of criticism, oh, you're not an alpha male. What do you mean? I'm an alpha male. I read philosophy and Evola. And you're just like, oh, for crying out loud. Why is he acting like this? Well, now you know. Now you know where the investment comes in. So that's bad narcissism. Good narcissism is that fake it till you make it attitude. Obviously, you want to be a more attractive man. You're going to use alpha tactically when you want to. You're going to use beta behaviors when people have deserved it and earned it. You're going to be assertive when you can, non-assertive when you're not. It's a very amalgamous like a very foggy type of identity. But the beauty of that is that means you're not ego invested into any one narrative script. The only narrative script you'll have that works in your life is, does this make my life better in any way at all? And is this providing value for me? If so, engage it. If not, disengage it. If I have to engage it, opt in as little as I have to in order to suffer as little as I must. It's the age old master and slave morality, or the Melanian dialogues. The strong do as they can, the weak suffer as they must. The only difference is you don't automatically build an identity about being one of the strong. You're actively working because you know the concept. It's what Dr. Glover calls the integrated man, or what Rollo would refer to as masculine point of origin. So you build the healthy narcissism there. So it's not putting the cart before the horse, you're putting the cart after the horse. Cart after the horse. At the same time, the Machiavellianism, cunning, all these strategies we're talking about are Machiavellian as anything. Just because it's Machiavellian doesn't mean you have to act like it's Game of Thrones and stab somebody in the neck when he's at a wedding. It just means you're acting with purpose. You're using strategies, you're using tactics. You're basically acting in your own best interest in a calibrated and deliberate way. And that's Machiavellianism. Doesn't sound so, you know, evil and dirty now, does it? Third one is psychopathy. And that, again, you can't train psychopathy because it's based on trauma or brain injury during developmental years. But what you can do is you can practice this stuff till it becomes instinctual. And to an outside perspective, it's going to be, they're not going to be able to tell if you're a psychopath, like if your head has that little bit of attractive psychopathy, or if it's just you being practiced. This is based on a very old skill that was developed First World War. It was called killology. And I know the name sounds edgy here, but bear with me. World War I, they had a finding that 75% of people firing weren't actually firing to hit their targets. They had a real aversion to hitting other people on the battlefield. So they'd shoot above, they'd shoot to the left, they'd shoot to the right. It was always warning shots. And they had a study. It's like, okay, so other than the absolute psychopaths that just love doing it, how can we train people to be more effective and project force in a more effective way? The one simple thing they figured out is instead of using like bullseye targets, they use silhouettes. And then people would fire at the silhouettes. And then once you got into like a combat situation, people weren't shooting at other people. They were shooting at silhouettes. It was just instinctual. So they were having the same behaviors that psychopaths did at a very lower cognitive cost. Now, the example there, it's about war. It's obviously very horrible. Human lives are special. You shouldn't want to kill them. I get the moral implications there. But the strategy is sound. And when you can do this stuff, when you can practice it day in and day out in small situations, building up to bigger ones, then you're able to act in your own best interest, even when people would be morally squeamish on it. Because you understand the consequences and you've made a choice to live with them. And you're almost instinctively able to do it without crying about it. Good example for this, if you've ever been raised on a farm, dog gets rabies, you have to put it down. Now, the idea of having to shoot a dog is absolutely abhorrent to most people. I could never do that to my boys, but that's the thing. At the same time, if one of them caught rabies and I didn't have a chance to deal with it first, it's basically a foregone conclusion and you have to put them out of their misery. But it's that certain farm boy attitude, which is that manufactured psychopathy, which you can use with these tools in order to be a healthy, more integrated man. And at the very least, you're not like a nervous rabbit. I'll end off on a Jordan Peterson quote, because I know how much I love him and how much you guys do too. It's that one about the rabbits. A rabbit can't be virtuous because a rabbit is weak and a rabbit is nervous. He just sits there shivering all day. Instead, you want to be, and I hate this example, you want to be like the wolf. A wolf can be moral because if he chooses not to eat you, that's a choice. It's a very dangerous person. Now, I'm not going to say be a wolf, because most people who do that do it as like that same negative narcissistic fantasy I was talking about before, where as soon as you call them a wimp, they're going to lose their mind. In fact, it's always a big red flag if you talk to anybody red pill using a wolf analogy, but I hope you understand it. So on that note, this is chapter seven, how to add negative inquiry, how it ties into a fully integrated plan, masculine point of origin. I've added just enough red pill to it so you can understand it at a greater depth than I hope you could have just by reading the book. Anyways, thank you guys. Very busy in the chat. So I talked before briefly about the chat stuff in and otherwise, the guys from the chat before, I'm going to get an issue out. So I'm going to make a post. I think I did already on YouTube. Let me pull it up now. We got a couple minutes to wait. On my channel, where I had the names of the guys that were in the chat. So we're going to pick one out of random here. Where does it put my posts? How do you visit? It's community. Community tab. All right, here we go. Oh, I didn't add it. I'm such a chode. Oh, wait, there it is. Read more. Oh, no, I didn't add it. All right, so I'm going to do it. I'm going to put a post up. I'll add the guy's name. Reach out to me. Easiest way is to DM me on Twitter. You can always email me as well if you're in the private community on Patreon. Just don't send me a private message there, but like you'll know how to reach out to me, and we'll make the effort, and we'll make things work. As far as I know, it was down to like 5 or 6 guys. But if you were chatting in yesterday's stream before I had a chance to cancel it, then just know you're on that list. And keep tuned, and we'll get on to that one. But I will catch you guys on the next one. Let's do our intro-outro thing. One of these guys, Mike, here. Off topic, but maybe rule zero. 6-year-old Bridger Walker prepared to sacrifice his life and sister from attacking dog. Male disposability, white knight, indoctrinated already. 6 years old. Now, blue-pilled, cheering crowds. Here's the thing, yeah. Now, I'm not going to say you shouldn't try to save your family. That's a genetic thing. Just don't let that ability be weaponized by perfect strangers that don't really care about you. And that's all I can say on that issue. Cheers, boys.